Hi, I'm Adam Meese of the Comic-Con International Programming Department. I'm here today to introduce one of this year's special guests, Brian Haberlin, who's not only the co-creator of Witchblade, but also one of the pioneers of digital comic art as a color artist, creator, and educator. Brian's graphic novel, Anomaly, is the longest original full-color graphic novel ever produced and contains 50 pages that are interactive with smart devices. On behalf of Comic-Con International, it's my honor to present Mr. Haberlin with our Inkpot Award for Achievement in Comic Arts.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
They really do like me.
Cool. Very, very cool. Very cool. Hi, everybody. Has everybody gotten? We're doing a lottery at the end, raffle at the end for a bunch of really cool stuff. If you haven't gotten a ticket yet, raise your hand. Sam? And just keep an eye on people who have come in. And I'll run that by everybody at the very end, too, just in case. Okay? So all kinds of cool stuff we have. I'm Brian Haberlin. I've been in the industry since 1993 is when I started. I'm going to show you guys my modern stuff, and then I'm going to take a step back and show you how I got to this place. Okay? So let's go ahead and show you guys a little bit of what we're doing at Anomaly Productions. At Anomaly Productions, we do original graphic novels. I know most people are used to seeing graphic novels that are collections, really. Everything else you see in the industry these days, it's like issues 10 through 15 collected, that's the graphic novel. We do graphic novels that this is the first and only place you've ever seen these things before, okay? Things out. Look. Okay. I've only made a little bit of a mess. It's okay. I can make much bigger messes as my family can subscribe to. This is Anomaly, the box it comes in. Inside, Anomaly. So one of you lucky people will be winning. Longest original full-color graphic novel ever done. Giant landscape pages. Every comic book artist wants to do landscape pages. They won't let you do landscape pages. So this is my company. I got to do what I wanted to do with it. I need to turn this on so they can make sure they got their thing going. It should be slid out again. Try it again. There you go. Yay, thank you. So, Anomaly, it has also, if that wasn't widescreen enough, we went one more step widescreen with it. This took 3 years to do, by the way. 370 pages. Now that's extra widescreen right there, right? But wait, there's more. The story is Earth 2717, a group of explorers are sent on a first contact mission. What they think is a standard first contact mission. What they don't know is they've been sent there to be gotten rid of. That no one ever returns from this planet alive. Their technology is destroyed, and they have to deal with the present inhabitants of the planets in a struggle for survival. Okay. So, wait, there's more. As I keep smashing into things. Shh. Anomaly can also be used as an offensive weapon if you need it to be. At 13.5 pounds, you can actually do, as we found out from taking this thing around from comic book convention to comic book convention over the years, it can be used, that we have the Anomaly workout program. So we have biceps, we have triceps, we can do shoulders. So that's another addition. But wait, there's more. As with all our anomaly production stuff, is we've gotten pretty good with augmented reality. Shoot this cable. I just lost the video. So you load the app, Apple or Android device, phone or tablet. The thing got stuck on me. Take it out. Try it again. I just took it out and put it back in. It's on Apple.
Okay.
Sometimes it just needs to be like a little happier. So here's the box. The book comes in. He's interactive, believe it or not. That is actually my voice. I had a little modulation done, all right? Inside the book itself, here's the cover. Can you give me a little more slack? That's awesome, thank you. Okay. The box the book comes in, or the cover of the book. And that was just our first test of the augmented reality stuff a few years ago where we wanted to see if we could do it. So it's like, the idea was to do a virtual pop-up book, right? We left it into it. It's kind of nostalgic, so that's all cool. Everything on the inside is fully interactive 3D. So when you point it at these characters, full 3D environment, you can go all the way around them if you don't cover it with your big fat thumb. He's interactive to touch. I poke him. He's a warrior. He'll poke me. He'll warn me off. I keep poking him, and he will poke me back. And then there's another 100 pages of appendix information that's not contained in the actual printed book. Okay? Now, the really exciting part about this, all this stuff, is the app itself tells you which pages are interactive. You'll notice then on the guide right there are several new badges. All right? So this is the third update of additional content inside the book. When it first started, it had 30 interactive pages. 40, now it's current 50 in 2 months, we just resolicited with Diamond again. We'll have another 10, so we'll have 60 augmented reality pages. It makes it the only graphic novels in history that can grow after publication. You know, to doing stuff that's not just interactive like that, but doing things that have, like, you know, we were crazy enough in this last thing. To actually put a game in it. So you can drive the hovercraft. You're in your hovercraft learning simulation. You don't want me driving your hovercraft because I'm a bad hovercraft driver. But you got a time thing. You got to go through. You know, I made one. Okay, that's all I'm going to do. But so we keep adding that stuff, behind the scenes information, all kinds of stuff like that, okay? That's Anomaly. Then what we have, too, down at our booth, which is booth 5556, if you want to get them, we have a bunch of little free guys that you can grab that are all augmented reality. So you grab our Light Comic-Con app. These are posters as well, available down at the booth for free. Tell the app which one of the targets you're looking at. This is from our Shifter book. This is also the Shift cover of the Shifter book. And he's interactive to touch. And he also has an X-ray mode. So what's cooler than your own virtual skeletal saber-toothed tiger, interactive saber-toothed tiger, right? He's looking at you, kid. Then we have the Anomaly one, which has a sampling of several of the different augmented reality points that we have. Put it back on. Now. Come, there you go.
Anomaly, available now at your local book and comic book store.
And we can flip. Get the next one. Flip.
Get the next one.
Okay, so help yourself to those. We've got our newest one for this season is Between Worlds, which is our book that's coming out next year. And I ruin more tables doing this. And you start fighting him. If you get him mad enough, he'll start shooting fireballs at you. Okay, so get those at our booth 5556. Our other book that's out currently is Shifter. Shifter is a contemporary Hitchcock action thriller with a sci-fi twist. So look at this one too. This has currently 35 interactive pages in it. Okay, so that's what we're doing currently. But let's go to how I got here in the first place. I had my first job offer in comics when I was 18 to go and from a San Diego Comic-Con back at the old convention center, showing my portfolio to then editor-in-chief of Marvel, Jim Shooter, and John Romita Sr. And they said, sure, come out. You can start as one of Romita's Rangers, is what was in the bullpen at that time. You fixed pages, you did other things like that. They would promise you, this is before that sort of, don't look at that. You don't know what that is. Okay. So, this is the 16-year-old Brian's art, with actually colored by Ashby Manson, who's actually another professional in the industry now, but we weren't so much then. But anyway, a couple years after that, I was better. But you had to move to New York, and they only promised you $35 a page. Remember, at that point, we're talking 1981, 82. So no real FedEx or anything like that. You had to be there to deliver your pages and all that stuff. And I didn't think, you know, $35 a page trying to live in New York or go to film school. So I went to film school. I have a master's degree in screenwriting. But I've been a professional illustrator on and off since I was 18, doing things for video games, for magazines, all that kind of stuff. Started at Lorimar Television, where we worked on things from Perfect Strangers, if you remember that show, Knott's Landing, Dallas, literally dozens of shows. We eventually were bought by Warner Brothers Television. At that point, I decided that was like in the 90s, and all of a sudden people started being able to make a living doing comics again. You know, it was like very hard to make a living for a while, so I go, let's look into that again. And I had a friend who, at the time, was talking to Todd McFarlane about getting some stuff done. So I did this, I don't think it's here, but I did this, they gave me a sample piece to color, right? And really no one was doing digital coloring back then. You know, I was using Painter on a 486 DX50, which was the fastest PC you could get at the time. And it was choking because it was a 16-bit operating system. Anyway, that's more information than anyone here needs to know. So I did this fancy, it was a Jim Lee, Tom McFarlane piece he gave me the sample on. It was Angela, with these big orb things in the back. I 3D modeled the orbs and put them in. I did special effects, knocking out all the line work, all this kind of fancy stuff. Got to Terry Fitzgerald, who was Todd's. Everyone of the original image owners had their henchmen, so to speak. Terry Fitzgerald was Todd's henchman, really, at that point. Terry's like, okay, great. You know, Todd says, can you put back in some of the line art? And he goes, and you could have maybe a poster print to do, but, you know, you're not going to get a job with us or anything. I was like, okay, great. So, like everybody else, ran around San Diego Comic-Con with my portfolio, standing long lines, trying to see what everyone else has in their portfolio. The guys who are in those portfolio reviews, chances are don't want to be doing those portfolio reviews and are not qualified to do those portfolio reviews in the first place. If they give you any kind of criticism, usually it's criticism that they've heard from their editor-in-chief, who's five rungs above him in the feeding chain of things, and they don't know why, they'll just say it, right? So, years coming here, nothing. Finally, a friend of mine, Rod Underhill, who some people may know in the industry, said, we're going to get a booth in the small press area. And this is 92. And he goes, you want to split it with me? Yeah, why not? Better than running around with my portfolio the whole time, right? So I had a computer. I did a 3D animated version of Spawn. I did this giant inkjet print with Green Lantern coming down with a 3D modeled Green Lantern and then 3D modeled wings behind him that were glowing. And everybody and their mother came up and offered me work. Okay? So I decided to go with Mark Silvestri at Top Cow. And we started basically, how do we color a comic book digitally and get it to work? Okay? It was a great place to learn to start. The old Homage Studio. Get this big. The old Homage Studio was in Mira Mesa, San Diego. It was open floor plan. There was probably two offices that had doors. Everything else were cubicles. Mark would be working in his cubicle area as he's working on his new Cyber Forces. He's putting up the original art up on the board until Scott Williams, or one of his guys, who's right next door, the other side of the cubicle, takes it, does the inking, puts it back up. You know, then that is scanned by us, and we go to the color. But that was also Jim Lee doing Wildcats around the other corner that you could go hang out with. There was the new kids on the block, Travis Cheris, Dave Finch, Joe Benitez, Billy Tan, some incredibly talented guys who, and everybody was really competitive. So it was a great place to learn, you know. And I was lucky in that I always was a stronger renderer than I was a colorist, especially back then, but I could get away with it because I could render that kind of thing. I got to learn under Joe Child. Joe did all the color guides for Wildstorm, Top Cow, a few other things. That's practically enough of as many books as they did. Beautiful, these are on 8.5 by 11 boards, full marker and color pencil comps, and you can see that that's something, right? And when I first got there, I told Marco, why don't we just scan these? Why do you need to hand this to me to then make my version on the computer? So we tried that, actually. The very first published piece of comic book art that I ever did is right. Right here. Okay, it's a little low res, but let me zoom out. But you'll notice, see, the thing was, comic coloring at the time, most of it was done digitally, and most of it still wasn't done digitally. Was done by the Todd Barrett system. That was only at Optics. That was Steve Olip's company. It was a dedicated coloring system which used vector graphics. So you could run it off something that had no horsepower. I mean, you really could run a color comic page on a 286 computer back then. But it was all accompanied by numbers. And you had all these bands that you see. So if you go back to the really early image stuff, you see these bands on stuff. But it wasn't necessarily that program wanted to make that, it's just how it worked. And it was to do lighter files because it had so many colors. You're not going to do a gradient that has, you know, 1,000 colors in that program. You're going to do a gradient that has 16 variants of whatever the color is, because it's a lighter file and it's an older computer, right? But it became a look. And so when I first started working at Top Cow, it was, I need to have bands in my color. So see all those little movie things on Stryker's big metal plates there? After I colored it, I posterized it. Oh, this is so cool! And you've got a lot more bands than the other guy did. Okay. Eventually we didn't have to worry about bands anymore, thank God. But in the beginning, that was bands. In the beginning, I have to thank Joe Chido for teaching me color. Cool light, warm shadow, the idea that you think cinematically about color. that you don't do all of a sudden change color in the background of a comic book panel, you know, for no reason at all. It's like, here's your scene. These are the colors in the scene. If some powers start going on, they affect the colors in the scene. If some gunfire starts going on, they affect the colors of the scene. What color is the main light? What color is the ambient light? So you know what your shadows and stuff are. It's the best way to learn to color, and it's eventually why we didn't have to use color guide people anymore, because it all became cinematic. Once you knew that Ripclaw's suit was white and red, you didn't need somebody to do a color guide for you if you knew that you're going to have moonlight here and, you know, whatever. And you just follow to the indications of good line art. Now, if it's bad line art, then that becomes a little more difficult. But if it's good line art, it's pretty much indicated. I mean, a pencil or an inker will indicate a cast shadow. Okay, so the light's then coming like this. The nose shadow's going over here, so the light's again going like this, you know. And you just need to follow those cues, and you're good. So, that was the first one. I think it probably took me... Everyone is incredibly slow when they start this. I've trained a lot of good colorists in my day. Peter Steigerwald, Richard Isenov, Steve Furkow, you know, a bunch of guys who are still pretty famous at doing this stuff. Everybody's really slow when they start. Okay? This probably took me 3 days to do. Okay? And Richard and Steve and those guys, it would take them a week to color a page. Okay? Most, to be a professional colorist in the industry, you know, 22 pages a month, you have to color minimum a page a day, and more like to be able to do 3 pages a day to be a professional colorist. So that just shows you how that ramps up. But it ramps up fairly quickly. Okay. All right, so working as a colorist, starting with a team, getting a bigger team, we eventually had a fairly large coloring studio there. I kept reminding Mark, you know, I also am a writer and I could do some other stuff. So the very first thing that he let me get my hands on as a writer was Ballistic. And that was with this new kid that was just started at the studio, Mike Turner. And Mike and I became very good friends. Miss him a lot. But this was, if you haven't seen the inside of this book in a long time, take a look at the inside of these 3 issues. Because Mike, it was Mike almost like he is now, but not quite, and it's very interesting to see the changes. So that's, oops. And that's another issue. So I'm now Vice President of Creative Affairs for Top Cow. I'm running the creative side of the company, and she is big. Lady Death is big. And we're sitting in a meeting going, you know, I bet we can do a female character better than their female characters. So we went out, had creative meetings, kind of ran it like you'd run it when I was doing stuff in TV. So development and all the stuff, you throw everything out the window. And let's see. Hold on. I know what I'm doing. Trust me. I'll get there in the end. And she came into existence. Originally, her name was going to be Sarah Lopez. Not a very well-known fact. Mark wanted to change her to being Italian, so that's okay. That's also one of the very first fully digital painted covers to be out. It really wasn't ready for prime time at that time, but we did it anyway. I got to destroy a nice piece of Mike's pencils with that. Anyway, it hit at the right time. We launched it with She Psy Blade was the thing. It wasn't even a whole thing. We launched her in this other book that was a crossover with She, which was the big book at the time. Psy Blade was a hot character for us. She was introduced to it in it, and then the first issue, and she became a top 10 hit very quickly. Thank you. And she's going to have her 20th anniversary next year. She'll be 20 years old. Get back here. All right. So, working away at Top Cow, people start having the image owners have the great idea to have them all switch books. Okay? Todd's going to do Cyberforce. Mark's going to do Spawn. Jim did Savage Dragon, I want to say. So that means Eric probably did Wildcats and blah, 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 blah. Okay? We did Spawn. And so, one, Mark rediscovered that doing a single character book is a lot faster than doing a multi-character book. It was the first book that I've been working with him on ever that he was done before the deadline. Okay, I think that also led to him go, you know, I think I really should get this Darkness thing going. He had the idea for the Darkness when I first met him in 92. So it took him a long time before he got that thing out again. But I think this issue is what made him think, yeah, I think I want to do a single character book. But it had another effect. So as I told you before, Terry Fitzgerald was Todd McFarlane's henchman, main guy running his things. You know, he's not a mean guy, don't let me get it wrong. They all have their kind of right-hand man, but they're always usually set to do the dirty work as well. So, but I knew him, and I liked him. We'd have beers together, blah, 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 blah. And Top Cow was this big area, open area. We had a receptionist. Brian, there's a Terry Fitzgerald on the phone for you, and this is just right after this book has come out, okay? And I go, hey, Terry, how's it going? Dish isn't Terry. Dish is Todd. Oh, hey Todd, how you doing? He goes, hey, bud, I just shot to Spawn 25. It looks really pretty darn good there. You happy there? And at the moment, I was, but eventually it became a struggle because I was butting heads with the guy who was running the business side of the company, and I decided, and we were going to have that guy right there with the dark hair, Ian, and I wanted to be home more, and I had a clear offer from Todd before that said, basically, you can live wherever the hell you want and work on my book. And you could start your studio and then work for everybody else, because Jimmy and Joe had been pounding on my door. You know, they're about to start the Marvel Knights and stuff. So I was like, okay, time to start my own studio. So with Todd as my first client, I got to start my own studio. But this was a while. I didn't take his offer at the time. I was loyal to Mark. It was only once it became a huge pain in the ass to work at Top Cow. So, we started Haberlin Studios. We worked for Todd. We worked for Marvel, DC. Let's see who. Let me show you one of the stuff from. So, Jimmy and Joe had me out. Marvel Knights. If you guys remember Marvel Knights. Relaunching Daredevil with Kevin Smith writing it. We had Bernie Wrightson on Punisher. We had Joe Jesko Mark Teixeira on Black Panther, which was one of my favorite books ever to color. We even became such a popular thing, we started doing mainstream ad campaigns with the Marvel characters. Let me find you one of those. Where is it? I know it's here somewhere. There we go. This was from an Italian fashion magazine. That was an actual fashion high-end suit that was for sale. Of course, you have to remember, Matt can't see, so it's okay that he's wearing this thing, okay? But, you know, mainstream ads from this stuff, it really helped, you know, the whole Marvel Knights thing showed that you put good people on good titles and the books will sell and become popular, and that became Joe's mantra at Marvel as soon as he got to take over as editor-in-chief after Marvel Knights, you know? Let me show you another Marvel Knights book that I'm proud of, that I have an Eisner for, shared with my studio. Got too many things here. Let's see. Where did I stick it? There we go. Okay. Let me get these in order real quick. Hold on. Sort by date. This should get a little bit more in order for us. There we go. Okay, so make sure it's opening the right thing. Hold on a second. So, Inhumans with Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee. There's the black and white version, the color version, and this is myself and Dave Kemp from my studio working on this. Just the color, if you guys ever are interested in what that looks like. Really, once you get to a certain level of rendering, you can kind of tell what's going on almost without the line art. This is with the line art, of course. And it was best new series, I forget which year. But it was a pleasure book to work on. Jay is a very easy guy to color. When you're all open like that, lots of decisions you can make, but it's very obvious as to where his light sources is, which makes it so you don't have to think about it either. One of my favorite guys to color in the world is Greg Capullo, because Greg actually has that all set up. So anyway, I'm getting a nice full head of steam. The studio's doing great. We're working for everybody. I figure I'm going to start. Let's start publishing now. That's the next step, right? I'm going to start publishing. So with Wills Portasio, I started Avalon Studios. Okay, our first title was Stone. Anybody remember Stone? Wills Portasio, myself. It was number one independent book of 1998. Sold 75,000 copies. It was only eventually beaten in that year from reorders on Jay and Silent Bob, as far as an independent book. The funny part about this book, so it deals with a guy, the premise was, imagine if Kevin Sorbo really was Hercules and didn't know it. Okay? This guy plays a mythical character on TV and doesn't realize he really is that mythical Filipino hero. Okay? Sony has these weird creative meetings every year, and they kind of pick what's the hot new thing that we should be going after for that next year. Stone was the hot new thing. We had Sony Entertainment did a soundtrack for the comic. It had Fatboy Slim. It had, all kinds. Do you remember some of the other people who were on that soundtrack? Big names. I know I'm talking to my son behind you. He's pretending that I'm not talking to him. But major names. And then they're like, okay, this is going to be a feature film. And we went to have a meeting with the feature film people. This is a funny story. You'll get it in a second. And Columbine had just happened. And we have kind of a Highlander element to the hero in that they have the Agamat stones. And the stones give you different powers. And you want to accumulate the stones. But you have to defeat the enemy to get their stones, right? Basically, they have to die at the end of the day. And Amy Pascal, the head of Sony, said, too violent. So guess where it ends up at Sony then? It doesn't go away at Sony. You know where they put it? They put it in their children's animated section and produce a pilot and a script. Okay, so too violent for feature films, Saturday morning TV, we're all good, right? So we had Stone. Stone did very well for us. But what did better for us was this lady here. I don't care. That's Kildare. Aria is the name of the book. When we came out with Aria, it was the second highest selling book in the United States. Not independent, not anything else like that. Just flat out book-wise. Premise for her, Brian Holguin and I got together and go, let's do our Doctor Strange. That's our Doctor Strange. Because sometimes that's where the creative things come from. It's like, not so much totally reinventing the wheel, but thinking, I like that concept, I want to do it either differently or presume to do it better. You know, I think you want to presume to do it better, because then if you miss, you know, maybe hopefully it will still be at a nice, you know, nice loft, so it gets you a little farther, you know. She did very, 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 very well for us. One of the problems, but, and then we had The Wicked, which was our horror. What I wanted to do going into the thing was to have all the bases covered. So I had fantasy, I had sci-fi, I had, where are we at? Should be right here. There we go. I had horror with Wicked. My favorite character that will be coming back sometime next year. I had, where is he? Come back. Where are you? These images hide on me. They do it on purpose just to piss me off. This guy right here. Virgil Hilt's Hellcop. He'll be coming out too. Again. But what eventually happens is, like, you know, I have a beginning graphic novel course, and I say one of the first things is, when you go into business with people and you're creating something with people, you want to make sure you have an exit strategy as well as a start strategy. It's not just about, like, this is our presenters that we're sharing. If you don't want to do this anymore and I still want to do it anymore, this is what happens to that percentage, okay? Get that done if you guys ever want to do creative work, okay? Don't ignore that. I didn't do that. It eventually became more trouble than it was worth to do for various reasons. And I had enough things to do, so I walked away from it, okay? I actually spinned around for a little bit, had a few different jobs. There were these nice fellows that employed me for a while. There was a woman with a robot hand there. She was pretty cool. There was my next job that I moved at from that was these guys. It was this island-based technology corporation. They seemed like nice folks. It got a little weird. Then I got a great offer from these folks who really, really, really seemed to have some things going on with space initiatives. Anyway, none of these long-term things worked, and I had to go back to comics. Okay? So, that's when, there we go. That's when I started, so we have the Marvel Knights stuff, still have all the other stuff happening. That's when there became, Todd wanted to get an editor-in-chief for the first time since he had Spawn, okay? And so I thought that was a cool thing. And I got to, oh, by the way, so before that, and this is something I always did on the walls. I did a ton of Marvel licensed artwork. So everything for the first Fantastic Four movie, all the painted things, or lunchboxes, vitamin pills, all that kind of stuff, those are all my versions of these. This was for an early Wolverine piece. I'm sure you've probably seen a lot of this stuff. I always kind of get amazed when I see where the hell it's ended up. That's one of mine. My thing. We got, where's another good one? Let's see. A nice pretty Sue Storm head, I sure is right around here somewhere. Let's see. Do, there we go. So they often wanted these things in components so they could move them around on whatever the hell the thing was. So there's a Sue Storm head for you. Okay. So, anyway, so did a lot of licensed product stuff for them, and then took over as editor-in-chief for Spawn, where I got to bring in Philip Tan, who I've worked with before and liked a lot. And we got Philip to do... Where are we at? Initial design work for a new spawn, God Slayer spawn. So I brought in Phil, and I brought in my other cohort in crime. Open with Mr. Jay Anacleto. That's the pencil rough. That's the finished pencils. Color. Godslayer spawn. So we got to launch Godslayer spawn. We got to do collections of books that Todd had never collected before. We collected the Ashley Wood Brian Bendis stuff. No one ever collected that before. Duh. Ashley Wood was so thankful. There was part of an issue that he didn't get to finish. And by the way, apparently Ash hates Ben Templesmith. It was Ben jumped in to finish the rest of the book. He said, "I will do the rest of that book for free when you do the reprint." And he did, because he hates Ben's work so much. okay, that's fine. And then we decided, because it was a very popular time, if people remember Todd McFarlane's Dragons, the toy line, these really cool dragons, right? I said, let's do a dragons book. So pulled in Brian Holguin and myself being the artist on it. So editor-in-chief, and then I'm starting on the dragons book for Todd. Here's one of the promo pieces for it. Here's another one of the pages from it. I got it. I know I got it. There we go. This is a whole section of things. Open with... Thank you. That's a page from it. So big... period piece, dragons book. That's another promo piece from it that I did. Another piece from it, that's from something else. But as I started turning in pages, I turned in probably my sixth page from it, and Todd was like, "Oh yeah, you know, this guy's kind of good. I like the guy who's drawing the dragon book. You know, maybe he could take over Spawn." I go, first of all, remember it's me doing the dragon book. Well then, okay. And so I took over Spawn. So we never saw, the dragon book never saw the light of day. And I took over Spawn. That really is how Todd talks, by the way. Page from Spawn. So David Hine and myself got to do this dark, gritty, realistic... as realistic as you can get with Spawn, right? Spawn, where I got to reinvent some of the main archetype characters. Like, this is the clown, who was normally a big fat guy. And now we made him just skinny psychopath. Another page. Another wonderful page. We got into the origins of things. All kinds of fun stuff. And it did really well. But then again... Todd helped me with another fork in my road. So I was, at the time, helping Robert Kirkman and Todd start their Haunt book that they wanted to do together. Okay, and that means finding artists, finding, you know, everything you want for it, going into meetings about it. And you'd be in a meeting with Todd and Robert, and Todd would be going, "Yeah, but you don't be talking to the guy we had the meeting with. Yeah, but you don't want to get known for doing Stan and Jack's characters or Bob's characters. You want to be known for doing your own characters, characters you own and stuff like that." And Robert, of course, would chime in with the exact same thing. And I'd be thinking, "Yeah, I used to do my own characters." And eventually there became enough of that I decided I'm going off to form my own company again. And that's where Anomaly came from. So that's kind of the rough road to Anomaly, so to speak, and to my new stuff. Here, I'll show you some other fun stuff that I didn't get a chance to show before real quick. If anybody has any questions, go ahead and raise your hand, by the way. Some of the stuff is just fun story stuff. So see this? This was a request by a very famous comic book artist for something that he could then send to his editors and gain another day of time. It looks fine on my end. I'll send it again. Jay Lee asked me for this. That's where that came from. And I have it so it's in layers, and they can flop out the board, so it could be a DC board if they need a DC board, an image board if they need an image board, guaranteed to get you another day of time.
I was going to say, why don't they just go open up the document in the notebook and just delete some?
Because they're comic book artists, and they don't think of it that way. Another fun one. Let's see. Okay. This was from a pilot that I sold to TNT called Badlands. The log line was going to be, it was basically, think of it there in this area of the West, there's an area where anything can happen. They call it the Badlands. It's got the Bermuda Triangle on dry land, okay? And that's what it is every week, dealing with something like that. Our lead character was going to be young Bat Masterson. The pitch line for the vlog line for the series was, meet the original Batman. Let's see, what's another fun one? You saw all my business cards. Those were fun. The other fun stuff that we're doing a lot of now is the 3D sculpting. So this is a 3D sculpt from ZBrush. Everything in my Spawn work, everything in Anomaly are all 3D based at some point. What that gets you is the ability to go and print your own version of these guys. This is off my replicator, so this really probably cost a few dollars to print. The plastic's pretty cheap. The replicator itself costs about $2,000. They're all going down. You can get ones now as low as $500. This is not the form for 3D printing that's going to be the future of 3D printing, because basically it's a hot glue gun on a CAD machine, you know? So they bust a lot. They need fixing a lot. This is not something you buy for your grandmother. You know, I have mine now. Right now, as I left the studio, it's on the floor because I need to put in a new thermocoupler. It's kind of fun because you get to tell your family when you get home. Guess what I just did? I installed a thermocoupler on my replicator. It's kind of Scotty here, right? These ones, these bigger ones, if you go down to my booth, you'll see an even bigger one. These are done to Shapeways. So this is a service bureau that does this. And this also does printing in multiple materials. So at Shapeways, you can do cool things like where did I stick it? Where is it? Where is it? Was right there. Come on. Here, while remember, I have to show you my Gwyneth and Steve. Not many people get a chance to see Gwyneth and Steve. This is a, let's see if we got sound. If we got no sound, you're not going to see it. What was that? We had trouble with sound coming out of this thing before. Do you have a sound going on? It should be on? Yeah, this thing's having a little bit of difficulty. All right, well, anyway, that's something I directed with Steve Martin and animated back in the day. We'll find a place to put sound on it somewhere. But anyway, so you get to print in gold-plated brass from Shapeways, gold, and a bunch of other things. Like, let me show you. I've got the smaller version. Dun, 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 dun. There we go. These are little guys from our new book, Between Worlds, gold-plated brass, stainless steel, okay, from your virtual model to these real things. It's a cool time we're being living. You guys can look at this after. Okay, they say they have 5 minutes left. That means, unless someone has a quick question, we're going to go to the lottery.
You know the business cards you were showing that you went to work with, like a Wayland Corp?
Yeah.
Those are real, right?
No. That was the Fringe Company. That was Massive Dynamic. Weyland Yutani is Aliens, the corporation behind all that stuff.
It's not just an aerospace company.
Yeah, and the Dharma Initiative is the company in Lost. All right, so any other questions real quick before we pull the winners? This one went first.
What 3D program were you using like early on your 46 machine?
Well, not even 46, brother. This is the machine right here. Turbo Silver and Animation Master, which was Playmation, I think, back in the day. Those are my very first ones. Spline-based modeler back then, very advanced.
And you use Photoshop now?
Photoshop for 3D modeling, Maya, ZBrush, and Poser for a lot of 3D stuff.
Okay.